ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we are reading from 9th canto, chapter 13, text 11. Everyone can repeat. Deva uchu videha usyatam kamam, videha usyatam kamam, lochane susarininam, lochanesu saririnam, unmesanani mesabhyam, unmesanani mesabhyam, loksitodhyatma samsitaha, loksitodhyatma samsitaha. Deva uchu, the demigods said, videha, without any material body, usyatam, you live, kamam, as you like, lochanesu, in the vision, saririnam, of those who have material bodies. Unmasena nimesabhyam, become manifest and unmanifest as you desire. Laksita, being seen. Adhyatma samsthita, situated in spiritual body. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Maharaj Ki. The demigods said, let Maharaj Nimi live without any material body. Let him live in the spiritual body as a personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And according to his desire, let him be manifest or unmanifest to common materially embodied people. Purport. The demigods wanted Maharaj Nimi to come to life, but Maharaj Nimi did not want to accept another material body. Under the circumstances, the demigods, having been requested by the saintly persons, gave him the benediction that he would be able to stay in his spiritual body. There are two kinds of spiritual bodies, as generally understood by common men. The term spiritual body is sometimes taken to refer to a ghostly body. An impious man who dies after sinful activities is sometimes condemned so that he cannot possess a gross material body of five material elements, but must live in a subtle body of mind, intelligence and ego. However, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, devotees can give up the material body and attain a spiritual body free from all material tinges, gross and subtle. Tyakta deham punarjanma naiti mameti so Arjuna. Thus, the demigods gave him, King Nimi, the benediction that he would be able to stay in a purely spiritual body, free from all gross and subtle material contamination. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can be seen or unseen according to his own transcendental desire. Similarly, a devotee, being jivan mukta, can be seen or not as he chooses. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Naham Prakasa Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samarvrita. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is not manifest to everyone and anyone. To the common man, he is unseen. Ata Sri Krishna Namadina Bhaved Grayam Indriyaha. Krishna and his name, fame, qualities, and paraphernalia cannot be materially understood unless one is advanced in his spiritual life. Sevan mukhehi jivadam. One cannot see Krishna. Therefore, the ability to see Krishna depends on Krishna's mercy. The same privilege of being seen or unseen according to one's own desire was given to Maharaj Nimi. Thus, he lived in his original spiritual body as an associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Praschata Desatarine. Everyone, Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Everyone can repeat. The demigods said, let Maharaj Nimi live without any material body. Let him live in a spiritual body as a personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And according to his desire, let him be manifest or unmanifest to common, materially embodied people. So, Maharaj Nimi was very fortunate, he could choose, you know. We all took birth according to our karmas, right? How many of you were born and you came here according to your choice? Anybody? We all came according to our karmas, right? Somebody is in a male body, somebody is in a female body. On the street you see, you know, living entities in monkey bodies and many other bodies, right? That's all because of the karma, you know, accumulated from many, many past lifetimes. However, in this instance, Maharaj Nimi is very, very fortunate, you know. Here are the brahmanas performing yagyas and they are begging the demigod, please bring our king back. Right? When Kamsa died or Ravana died, there was no yagyas being performed. Nobody was saying, bring them back, right? Nobody was really saying, bring Kamsa back, bring Ravana back, you know. Bring Hiranyakasipu back. But he is a king. People are performing yagya to bring him back. There must be something special about him, right? The brahmanas performing, the best of the brahmanas are performing yagya. And beyond that, even the demigods are willing to let the soul of King Nimi come back into the same body if he so desires. But guess what? King Nimi was smart. He didn't want to come back in this material body. Now, many people experience, you know, near-to-death experience per se, right? I was studying one research done by some doctor, and he was saying that he's done research for years and years, some 40, 50 years of research, and he's come across at least 1,600 people who have given evidence, you know, of near-to-death experience. And one of our devotees also, I read about her yesterday, and she was saying that she was maybe very young, 10 or 12, and she was experiencing a lot of difficulties, bodily difficulties, due to past bad karmas. She had to go through several operations. And in one of the operations, she remembers that they were talking that there is very little chance of this little girl surviving, you know. And she was overhearing, and she also knew that she may not come back to life, you know. But being so little, she couldn't make head or tails out of it. But what happened is, during the operation, the body stopped. and they were trying to resuscitate very seriously to bring her back to life. And she remembers, even to date, that she was feeling so relieved that she was not in that body, and she could see the doctors and nurses running around trying to bring her back to life. And then somehow or another she came back to life. But before she came back to life, she heard this voice, and she remembers seeing some glow of light, that somebody was saying, "You have to go back because you still haven't met me and you haven't got to know me yet." No? So many, many years later, one of her sons joined ISKCON. Now this boy was very talented, very intelligent, and he had been telling his parents that I'm going to be famous, I'm going to be, you know, earning lots of money, and like they do in the West, from 18, 20 years old, which, you know, the youngsters, they leave home. So later on the mother found out through the father that our boy has joined the Hare Krishnas. You know? So she was shocked. She was saying, "He's joined Hare Krishnas, he's supposed to be a famous person, you know, bringing name and fame to our family." So she called up and caught up with him and came to one of the Sunday feast. You know, in the early days we used to have, even nowadays in the Western temples, European temples also, we have what we call Sunday love feast, and we invite people, you know. So she came to one of those feasts, and you know, her intention was to somehow or other get to understand her son. And then she spoke to the son, and she was making some head and tails out of the whole thing, but she was not satisfied. She said, "There must be something. What is it that, you know, brought my son here and got him so much involved?" And she met one of our Swamis, Birkrishna Swami, and she heard his lectures, and then she began to take Krishna consciousness seriously, started reading Bhagavad Gita, and then she realized, you know, what that dream meant to her, that, you know, she had to come to this path, to come to the science of self-realization, so she could, you know, meet devotees of Krishna, and through the devotees, she could meet Krishna, you know. So, you know, it's not an unusual thing, you know, that even one of our devotees from Nepal was telling me that in his village, you know, one person died and his name was Laxman, you know. So Laxman's dead body was carried away to the bank of Gandaki, and they were about to perform the final rites by putting the body on fire, and suddenly Laxman jumped out of the woods. Yeah, it sounds funny, but it's a real story, you know. So apparently the Yamadutas had made a mistake. There were two Laxmans in the same village, and they're talking, "Hey, listen, you got the wrong guy here." You know? So material world and material universe is full of imperfections, you know. There's a lot of things out there that we don't know, you know. That's why it's very important that we take our spiritual life seriously. And we see pastimes of Maharaj Nimi here, you know, and Vasishtha. These are two great personalities, you know. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are many wonderful pastimes given. And Krishna has, you know, made this pastime so that devotees, as us, as, you know, would-be devotees or endeavoring devotees, we can look at the different pastimes and come to some realizations, you know. And what are the things we can learn from each pastime, you know. In this particular instance here, you know, Vasishtha is supposed to be the guru. You know, Vasishtha has a very long life. He's a very, very pious person, you know. And likewise, Nimi is also a very, very pious person, you know. In the Kali Santaran Upanishad, you know, there is a dialogue between Maharaj Nimi and Janak Maharaj, you know, whereby they are talking about the different yugas. Because these souls are very, very advanced devotees. They can tell what is happening in the yuga, what's going to happen in the next yuga, like that. Just like as human beings, you know, we are able to deduce, okay, now the summer is coming, what's the temperatures are going to be like, you know. Just to give a small, minute example of, like, we are able to also make some assessments, you know. Temporary assessments for temporary lifetime, for temporary periods. But these are personalities who are great personalities. They were able to make and foresee many things that, you know, that were going to come. And one of the dialogues between Maharaj Nimi and Janak Maharaj was that as Kali Yuga comes in and progresses, it's going to be so degrading, so how will people, you know, be delivered? And that is the time, again, this Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Hare Nam Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gati Ranyita is being mentioned. Is what Lord Chaitanya is giving us 500 years ago was actually discussed in Treta Yuga by Janak Maharaj, no, and Nimi Maharaj. And these personalities or these kings were Raja Rishis, you know. They could actually communicate with the demigods, not to speak of, you know, human beings on the planet. And they could perform sacrifices whereby demigods would come, you know, and give the blessings, you know. In that kingdom it is said that literally every citizen, you know, regardless of what their position was, whether they were a sweeper, they were selling vegetables, or goldsmith, or ministers, or politicians, everyone was Krishna conscious, you know. Even on the streets you would see sweepers doing kathiyantascha mam nityam tusyanti cha ramanti cha, you know. That citizens, denizens would always be discussing the Bhagavad Katha, you know, the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and how important it is to make advancement in this spiritual lifetime, in the, you know, spiritually in this lifetime. So Maharaj Nimi and Vasishtha were there. They were very advanced devotees, but at the same time, we can see from their example, the pastime they performed, that if you lose our cool, you know, if you either become lusty or become angry, and from angry, you know, krodhad bhavati samoha, right? Samoha is what? Illusion, right? So become angry, then you become illusion, you know. And then from illusion comes vibhrama, yeah. What is that? Bewilderment, right? So when bewilderment comes, then you can see, you end up in the situation, even if you are great sages or great rishis, that you can, you know, end up making a mistake. Initially they both made the right, you know, decision that, okay, Vasishtha has been invited to perform the yagya, you know, by Lord Indra. So he had to respond and respect. And at the same time Maharaj Nimi was thinking smart that duration of life is short and there is no guarantee for death. It's not written that, you know, March the 17th at 4 a.m. in the morning you will be departing, you know, right? But so because he was intelligent, he was also thinking that I must perform the yagya because I don't know, tomorrow I may have to leave the body, you know. So they were both right in their perspective. So in the first step they were both on the in the right direction, you know. And also, you know, one day of the demigods, or Lord Indra, is like 100 days here. So if, in case he went out for 1 year, it would mean 100 years here. You know? So like that, Nimi Maharaj was thinking, you know, very wisely, that actually I must perform this yagya. But then when Vasishtha came and he became angry, you know, without logistics he became angry, because he was thinking, it's my disciple, how can he do something like this, you know. So he cursed, and then Nimi became angry. He was also Rajarishi, so as a king, he lost his cool. No? So what do we learn from this lesson? No? We can easily say, well, I'm not a Rajarishi, I'm not a cool guru, it doesn't apply to me, right? This is the smartest ignorance factor or zone that we can jump into and say, it doesn't work for me, right? No. What we can learn is that when you're doing the correct things, do it nicely and as nicely as possible. And sometimes when a situation arises and there is a situation amongst two devotees and there is some conflict of understanding, whether one is, you know, on a higher authority or lower authority, the person who is in the higher authority should think, if Vasishtha had thought, well, actually he did the right thing, or Vasishtha in the first place should have thought that, well, I'm going to go and duration life is short here and unpredictable, therefore I should arrange for another priest under me to perform the yagya, and I should give this, you know, then this situation wouldn't happen. But ultimately Krishna is in control. He wanted to perform this lila to be performed for our benefit, you know. Likewise, easily we could have said, the disciple could have requested the Guru that, please look, you're going to go and, you know, one day up there is 100 days here, I don't know when you're returning, you know. So please bless me and appoint another personality who can perform the yagya, you know. So then that way there would be no conflict. But sometimes, because of the situation, conflicts arise, you know. So in the conflict zone, it's important to understand that, you know, we should respectfully deal with each other. Can you imagine if in Kali Yuga we all had this cursing power? You'd be walking on the street and you'd be seeing in every other corner of the street a dead body lying, right? You'd be walking to some homes and they'd see dead bodies. You go and walk in the shop and they see some dead bodies, you know. Right? So, just as well that Krishna has been very kind that he hasn't given us the cursing power that Vasishtha Muni had and Nemi had, you know. At the same time, you know, we want to move on in our spiritual life, so we want to look at devotees, you know. Look at devotees like Amrish Maharaj or Prahlad Maharaj, you know. Right? Even today there is so much glorifications of Prahlad Maharaj, you know. In every town and village in India, it's very common. You ask about Prahlad Maharaj, almost everyone knows, you know. You know, talk about Amrish Maharaj amongst the devotee community, people are very familiar with that, because, you know, Durvasa was not being nice to Amrish. But on the contrary, Amrish had absolute firm faith, you know, in Krishna. So therefore he was able to sustain the onslaughts of Durvasa Muni, you know. And ultimately Durvasa had to come and surrender and beg forgiveness from Amrish Maharaj. So that's devotees. Devotees are like that, you know. So we have to endeavor, you know. We have to, instead of thinking, well, I'm not a Rajarishi, I'm not Vasishtha, we have to think like the Goswamis. Or like Shyamananda Pandit. You know, Shyamananda Pandit's pastimes is very interesting. You know, Shyamananda was initially known as Dukhidas. You know, his name was Dukhidas because his parents had seven, you know, miscarriages or seven siblings who died. So when he was born, his name was given as Dukhi. And then later on, he met with Hridaya Chaitanya. You know, Hridaya Chaitanya was also a very advanced devotee, you know. It is said that devotees saw that at one stage in a kirtan party, Lord Chaitanya manifesting, Gonitai manifesting in the dancing party and then entering, you know, Hridayananda. He was known as Hridayananda. And then when the lordships appear in into his heart, then he becomes known as Hridaya Chaitanya. And then Hridaya Chaitanya has a disciple whose name was Dukhi Krishnadas. He gave him the name Krishnadas, and Dukhidas said, yes, now I'll be known as Dukhi Krishnadas. You know? And then Hridaya Chaitanya, you know, saw the desire of Shyamananda that he wanted to go and reside in Vrindavan. So he said, yes, you go, spend time with Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami is a very advanced devotee there. And you go take shelter of him. So he comes and takes shelter of Jiva Goswami. And while he's taking shelter of Jiva Goswami, one of the instructions was that you go to Seva Kunj and you sweep every day. Sweep the Kunj every day. Because in the Nikunj, every day, the Yugal Kishore or the Radha Shyam Sundar and the gopis are coming to perform pastimes. So you go and sweep there every morning. And one morning he found an anklet. This anklet was glowing so much that the entire, you know, Seva Kunj was glowing. So Shyamananda or Krishnadas at the time, he took that and he could see this is something special, it's not an ordinary anklet. And he put it to his chest and he touched it to his forehead. You know. And then he saw an old lady coming to see him. Actually, he hides the anklet first. You know, he puts it under the ground, some under, so that there's not much glow, because he knew everyone will come running to see what is happening. You know. But then old lady comes and she says, did you find something? An anklet, we lost, you know. Some excuse she's making that Radharani, she doesn't say Radharani, but she says, my daughter-in-law was here dancing yesterday and she's left one of the anklets. And then he says, yes, but what is the proof that you are the right person? Show me the other anklet and I will give you. You know, there are different variations of, you know, kind of narrations. But this narration I like most is that, where is the other one? And she says, well, I've left it home. So then let's go to your home and see the anklet, and I'll give you the anklet. And then it is, the old lady reveals that actually no, it belongs to Radharani and I'm Lalita Sakhi. You know. Then Krishna Das is saying, please show me your true self, manifest your true self. And Lalita Sakhi is saying that if I manifest my true self, you will not be able to withhold, you will not be able to see me. You know. And then he says, well, mother, you are Lalita Sakhi, you can do anything. So bless me. You know, this is what the mood of devotee should be there. When we come in front of the deities, when we come in front of Srila Prabhupada, we come in front of the advanced devotees, we should ask for blessings. So he's asking blessings from Lalita Sakhi that, please bless me so that I can also take your darshan. You know? And so Lalita Sakhi blesses, you know, Krishna Das. And then as soon as she manifests her true self, he actually faints first. You know, her form is so powerful. And then he rises. And from that time he is known as Shyamananda. A special tilak is formed because of the anklet that he touched his forehead. And then he goes to Jiva Goswami all excited. And reveals everything to Jiva Goswami. Of course, Jiva Goswami is a very advanced person. He could already see what had happened. But when Shyamananda comes and Jiva Goswami says, hey, look, he's looking so blissful. What happened? You know, every day you're going to sleep, but you don't come back so blissful. Then he narrates the experience. And then from that time he becomes known as Shyamananda Goswami, Shyamananda Pandit. So, you don't have to be a Rajarishi. That was the point. You don't have to be in the lineage of Vasishtha Muni. You know, we are very, very fortunate to be in the lineage of Lord Chaitanya, you know, Gaudiya Sampradaya, Srila Prabhupada's mercy is flowing closelessly. And if we take this seriously, then we have a great chance, you know. We have to develop. Actually, it is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a very nice verse that says that you have to develop a greed to know Krishna. Not just be a formal person carrying out the regular duties, but there should be an intense desire. And that intense desire should turn into intense greed, so much so that, you know, at any cost you want to see Radha and Krishna, you know, through Guru and Parampara. So, this is a verse. It says, Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati kriyatam yadi kuto api labhyate tatra lovlyam api mulyam ekalam janma koti sukruti na labhyate. This is Chaitanya Charitamrita 870. This word lovlyam is greed and mulyam is price that you have to pay. And the translation goes like this, pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness cannot be had even by pious activity in hundreds and thousands of lives. I'll repeat that. Cannot be had even by pious activities in hundreds and thousands of lives. It can be attained only by paying one price. Only by paying one price. That is intense greed to obtain it. Intense greed to obtain it. And then it says, if it is available somewhere, one must purchase it without delay. If it's coming Krishna consciousness to you, go for it. Go for it aggressively. Don't miss out on this opportunity. You know? And then there's a long purport here, but one part of the purport that I really like, it says that the basic principle underlying talks between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai will be spontaneous loving service to the Lord. The regulative principles according to the injunctions of the Shastras are necessary insofar as one's original dormant Krishna consciousness is not spontaneously awakened. An example of spontaneous action is the flowing of rivers into the ocean. Nothing can stop this flow. know, nice example given here that nothing can stop this flow. So this is how we should be thinking, that how best we can acquire, you know, this Krishna consciousness, how best we can realize what is our constitutional position. You know? And that's why Lord Chaitanya, he didn't give us a whole granth, but he gave us just the six sastikam. And he says, cheto darpana marjanam, you know, regular marjanam is required. You know? Cheto darpana marjanam, that marjanam, cleanse your heart. Understand what marjanam means. Because if you understand what marjanam means, then your chanting will become perfect. Chanting will only become purified and perfect if we understand why we are chanting. You know, we are cleansing our heart. Cumulative karmas of many, many lifetimes are seated here. You know, and that you can realize when you are preaching to people. Some people will come very spontaneously to chanting the holy name. Others will come very moderately, and some are very, very difficult to get to come to chanting. And that gives you the level of understanding that how much heavy karma they have up here that they can't even listen to the importance of the chanting of the holy name. So that is important. Dvagni nirvapanam, you know. There is this, because of the karma, there is intense desire, this fire, you know. This intense desire inside us to enjoy, you know, the sense gratifications. And the only way you can reduce this and put out this fire is by chanting the holy name. You know? So we must take to the chanting of the holy name very, very seriously. You know? And you can only take it seriously if you can understand the importance. We must understand the importance. Look at Maharaj Nimi, look at Vasishta, look at Janak Maharaj, you know, Amrish Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj. All these examples, great examples, are given to us, you know. You know, when Sukhdev Goswami comes, he's only a young man. He's only 16. You know, he's coming, he's not dressed, but his body is so effulgent. And can you imagine the kind of communication that Krishna must have created, that there's like 88,000 sages are sitting up there, and they have not just come from, you know, from the local planetary system here, they have come from different planets. They're all assembled, you know. We think we have a great communication system. Just imagine the communications of people arriving there, little, you know, vimans, and be seated there, ready for Sukhdev Goswami to come. And when Sukhdev Goswami comes, he is all effulgent, you know. And Parikshit Maharaj is walking up there. Now, what an arrangement, you know. We know just to arrange one boat festival or Janmashtami festival or Gopunima festival, how many weeks and months and months of planning is going on, and then still there is defaults, right? There's still so many problems. There's so many complaints coming to the management, and so much, you know, complaints going on. This didn't happen, that didn't happen. But this must have been so perfect. Parikshit Maharaj walking, Sukadeva Goswami walking, thousands of, you know, sages sitting there. This is special arrangement for all of us, so that we can have this, you know. This is why this book is there for us. Please embrace it. Don't miss out on it. Krishna and his books are none different. You got Krishna in your hands. Don't think of it as a book and just leave it on a table or on a shelf for the dust to pile up on it. You know, respect these books as much as you would respect the deity's forms, as much as you respect your guru, as much as you respect, you know, Krishna if he walked right in front of you right now. That's how we should be. Our consciousness has to be crystal clear. You know, we have to be determined, you know. You know, that willpower has to be there. You know, there's two words, will and power, right? English dictionary, Oxford dictionary, it's there, will and power. When you put them together, becomes willpower. And when that willpower is there, the determination becomes unique, you know. Become unique, you know. Become unparalleled in your activities, you know. Then the greed will come. And when the greed will come, you will make the right choice. Instead of going around cursing yourself and cursing others and finding faults in others and defaulting others, you will find the right things to do. You will be doing the right things. You will become like a gemstone. You will become like a touchstone. You'll be surprised when you give Krishna consciousness in a profound way to other people, regardless of who they are, you know, they will reciprocate. If there is purity in you, then it doesn't matter how demoniac a person is. You'll see the consciousness will change just by the force of purity that emanates from the devotees, you know. And Prabhupada was an ideal example. Wherever he went, there was so much purity in him that people were just touched and moved. In the early days, all the devotees who met Prabhupada, they hardly met him one or two times, but they were able to go, you know, go all over the world and preach. You know. Prabhupada was a touchstone of purity, force, Krishna consciousness. He was giving. We have to become like, you know, like, acquire the knowledge, practice everything, and become giving. You know. Thank you so much. If there's any questions or comments, I can receive.
Thank you so much, Prabhu, for your wonderful class. Maharaj, many people want to have the material body and the demigods are awarding this verse we see. The material body, not only the material body, they award that you will be associate of Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yes.
So, then what do they have this power? Because we do not see any other example, I don't recall any other example, the demigods have this power to make somebody eternal associate of the Lord.
See, demigods are directly representing Krishna, and from this pastime we can understand that they do have this power. In fact, even sages have power. Look at Narad Muni. You know how he was blessed just by eating the remnants of the sages. Yeah. So likewise, and then Hanuman, you know, he had this power. And the demigods are also able to come. The only difference between demigods and the spiritual associates of the Lord are demigods' lives are temporary also, you know.
Yeah,
whereas, and this, but they can still come and manifest in front of you if they want to, you know. But here, you know, Nimi is being empowered. Narada Muni is also empowered. He can go in front of any biggest of the rakshasas without any fear and say, "Hey, Kansa, you know, you're going to be killed. Hey, Hiranyakashipu, you know what's going to happen? Ravana, you know what's going to happen to you next?" You know. So Krishna uses them as an agent to pre-warn them, you know, to get them all excited and get prepared, you know. So, yeah, it's true. I mean, this is the very reason we should see that, like, you know, Prabhupada is giving that little part in the Prabhupada that, you know, people misunderstand that when you don't have a material body, you are a ghost, you know. But ghostly bodies are acquired by those people who are miscreants, who are sinful people, you know. They cannot manifest in front of us, you know. Ghosts cannot manifest as the desire. But the spiritual associates and demigods, they can associate, they can appear as in they desire to. That's their willpower, you know.
The ghost cannot appear before us?
Ghosts cannot appear. If you can imagine, the ghost could appear in, I don't know how many ghosts there are around the universe.
But on that point, I will make a correction.
So sure, go ahead.
Ghosts can appear, and in my life I've seen ghosts twice.
Wow. Okay.
And the first time was in Calcutta Temple,
mm-hmm.
And so in the afternoon we were taking rest after lunch. And I felt something sitting on my chest, and it was breathing in the opposite formation of my breathing. And I looked up and I saw this figure. It was a smoky figure, and I tried to remove it from my chest, but my body was paralyzed and I couldn't move. And we know that a ghost will enter into your body in a weakened condition, so therefore it can take advantage of your body to enjoy sense gratification. So my faculties came back after being in a slumber, And then I was able to lift up my arm and I smacked the ghost and I shouted Hare Krishna, and then he went away. And so this ghost was a kind of a vapor ghost, but the second time was in Laguna Beach Temple. So this was the Laguna Beach had just bought a church, and this church had been haunted because someone had committed suicide in the church. And if you went into, we were doing work, and we'd go into the temple to do work, and upstairs you could hear doors opening and closing and banging and things such as that. And we were living in a house a few doors away from the temple, and I mean the church. And one night I was lying down, getting ready to take rest, and then at the foot of my place of sleeping, this ghost appeared, and this ghost was in full color, very vivid and bright, and he was, I don't know if you know calypso dancers, they wear the blouses,
yeah,
light blue blouses and colorful clothes, and he was standing there looking at me, and he starts going, making a sound like a siren. Starts running around my body laughing. And then he continued doing this, and then again my consciousness became more empowered, and I shouted at him, Hare Krishna! And then he left. But the next night another devotee was taking rest, and we heard this strange noise coming from the room.
Yes.
And we went into the room, and this ghost had somehow entered the body of this devotee, and the devotee was on the bed or on the floor, and you know when a cat gets angry, it will arch its back. And so this devotee was going like this. And so we know that the ghost had entered into his body. And so a group of us devotees, we began chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then this devotee came back to his senses. So if the ghost wants, yep, they can make themselves visible.
Nice. So this ghost must be intelligent, came to the Hare Krishna devotees instead of going to the,
yeah,
to the hippie festival. You have a question? Yeah. Also regarding what you were saying about Dundukari, Prabhu, that, see, Dundukari could only be heard by,
yeah,
Gokarn, not by everyone. He could not be seen by everyone. So that's another aspect to that, is that if one is very advanced devotee, they can maybe see the ghost or, you know, help the ghost. Generally what Prabhupada is saying, that they do not have the five elemental body here, you know. So they have a subtle body, mind and ego that they travel with, you know. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the wonderful lecture. My question is, you talked about how from anger comes illusion and from illusion comes bewilderment.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, when everything is predestined, how does it affect the way you think, if you think like a Goswami or you think like someone else? Because if a conflict is predestined, it will eventually happen.
Nice question. So predestination is there, but it is not fixed. It's flexible. So you can change the predestination, you know. It's just like you plan to, say, fly from here to Hawaii, for example. Everyone wants to go to Hawaii, it's a nice place, right? But then, that is your destination, but you may decide that actually going there is also important, but I also want to go to Washington, D.C. So you change your plans. You go to Hawaii and you go to Washington, D.C. also, or you may go to Honolulu or some other place. So that flexibility is there. Our karma is there. Our karma is making certain decisions. It is said at the, in the Shastra that at the age of 16, many cumulative lifetimes of karma takes over you, your life. Until the age of 16, you are under the nurturement of your parents. So if you have a good Guru Mata and good Guru Pita, and they're guiding you, that will help you, you know. But at the age of 16, your karmas will come and take over your life, and then you start going to your particular direction. And that's why Prabhupada also advised his parents that don't get upset because you want your child to do this or do that, but they start doing something else, you know. And that is because of the many lifetimes of karma, they'll go in a particular direction. So they're going in a particular direction, but at the same time Krishna says, I'm giving you minute freedom. That minute freedom allows you to make certain adjustments. So you may commit more sinful activities, or on the other hand, you may, you know, act in a very pious way and get rid of all the impious karmas that are accumulated here. That's why we say Cheto Darpan Marjanam, that the more you chant those impious activities or karmas that you're carrying with you, you know, that big mountain starts becoming a small molehill. And ultimately, if you have intense greed to know Krishna, then it gets diminished. Okay? Thank you so much. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.